That's perpy.
I'll be walking in place next to a dumpster.
You say later because you're dumb.
That's perpy.
Well, because I always win. What are you talking about?
First in the flame.
That's perpy.
And welcome to another issue of the Unique Geek Weekly. I'm your host, John, and with me on the phone this week, we have three geeks from Unique Geek, and they are Ed,
A.
Sterling,
Moo,
and Ron. Yeah. Ron, who is in Orlando this weekend. What are you doing out there in Orlando, Ron?
Hanging out with my sister. Watch cool. Some Mystery Science Theater. That's about it.
Cool. Sterling, what have you been up to?
I've been working on my website. Finally got it all back up after my hard drive crashed. And got it back up. I finished NewBardsPress.com. It's a writing site for writers to submit and publish their stories.
Cool.
And poetry and essays and all sorts of stuff. So we're looking for people to come in. And I got some people publishing to it already. So I've been working on that like for a couple months now.
Nice. So that's newbardspress.com. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes, it is. Cool. Cool. So it's for anyone who loves literature in all its forms. You can go online and read any story that's published. Everything on the site is free.
Does Hustler count as literature?
Say what?
Nothing. Ron was complaining about reading. I was asking if Hustler counts as literature. And Ed, what have you been up to?
Absolutely nothing, actually.
I heard that you've been living the life of the rich and famous lately.
Oh? What have I been doing this?
You've been flying in private airplanes and going to the Bahamas. And
oh, yeah, that was a couple weeks ago, yeah.
just a couple weeks ago.
We had a property. The company I work for has property there that we're building up a new resort. And I went over there for the week and installed some servers.
Did you have some caviar while you were out there?
No. No.
Did you sip champagne?
No. 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 I had,
wow, there is nothing interesting in the story, isn't there?
Calique beer. That's my new discovering. I've never had Calique beer before. So I tried Calique Gold. That was pretty darn good.
Is it tasty?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Where did you go again?
The Bahamas.
The Bahamas.
Grand Bahama Island. Specifically.
Hmm. All right.
I stayed in Freeport there for the week. Flew in our company private plane, landed on our private strip, took off on our private strip, etc., etc. It was nice.
Well, that's some life you're living. You live a rough life,
right? Private strip. That's what I want.
I'll strip privately for you.
Not that kind of strip.
Anyway, let's get into some news. Ron, I understand you have at least one item.
At least, yes. Actually, two kind of similarly related items. First being that it's official now that Dark Horse Comics is going to be publishing an 8th season of Buffy the Vampire Slayer comic book version. It's actually written by Joss Whedon. There have been rumors about this, and I heard about it at Dragon Con, but until I see it on sci-fi.com, I don't believe it. But apparently, he published in a 4-part series. First one's supposed to launch in March. This is quite a ways away. I'm not really sure if it's going to be actually an 8th season, as in starting like right off after the actual 7th season, or if it's going to be, you know, starting up now, because there was some reference back in, you know, Angel, as to what Buffy was doing, so I'm not sure if it's gonna, you know, pick up from 2003, or if it's going to be, you know, picking up from 2007 when it gets published, but we will wait and see on that. In another similarly related kind of a thing, if you're into, vampire hunting type things, slaying and hunting and comic books, the, not sure if people for the Anita Blake series by Lowell Hinton.
Sorry. Go ahead, Ron. Continue.
Why are you laughing at me?
Nothing. I want to hear what you have to say about this. When I hear the news.
Alright. Anyway, so there was this series. It started actually the same year that the first Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie, came out. So some people who were just finding out about Anita Blake, Vampire Hunter, think, oh, it's a ripoff of Buffy. And then not completely... Well, not completely different, but, you know, she's not a knockoff or anything like that. The novel started way back a long time ago, back in 92, I believe. And basically, it's a woman that she has pink vampires, but it's got a whole lot of different things, because she's also a necromancer, where she's able to raise the dead, and she's a private investigator. And
she's also the Secretary of State, isn't she?
Sure. And the... now, that's Iron Man. She basically stars and all the other supernatural things are known to everybody, and they... when the first book came out, they'd just gotten, the Supreme Court had given them living status, essentially, so that you couldn't just walk around and kill a vampire. That would be considered murder if you did, for no good reason. But she's the official vampire hunter executioner, where vampires do break the law, enabling to death from. Anyway, so it has to do with comic book, is that they're going to be doing a graphic novel, I guess, series that then they're going to put into graphic novel form, 12-issue series.
Is it going to be published by Penthouse?
No.
The reason I asked that is because
dear Penthouse, this guy was necking on me, and
no, I'm dead serious. Have you read the Anita Blake stories?
Okay. Yeah.
They slowly turned into softcore porn. And then about book six, it turned into straight up porn bestiality stuff.
Well, no, they're werewolves. It's not really
sweet.
No, they were werewolves. But, they were were rats. There were vampires, all in a whiff pile and everything. And Anita was in the middle, keeping it all together. I mean, this is not.
Yeah, unfortunately, the later books do get a little more Harlequin.
Define whiff pile.
Initial first ones were good in their action series, and yeah, killing vampires.
And that's the thing, is I did agree, and that's why I was laughing in the beginning when you were mentioning this, that they were actually going to be making a comic book out of this, because the first book was fun and enjoyable. It was popcorn fantasy. It was a popcorn vampire. The second book was like riddled with expletives and language issues, and she started hitting the sex a little bit more, and by the time it was like it was like she was on call, like the editors of the publishing house or whatever said, okay, we need to sell more stories, we need to do this, and she just went off literally with her character. And
so she just kind of got off on her character, is what you're saying?
I'm saying it's not Buffy the Vampire Slayer at all, and it's not really for kids either. It's
probably not yet.
No, not at all. But it's got these beautiful. Have you seen the covers in bookstores? It's got these like seductive romance novel feels and everything. And I could just see like a 12-year-old or a 13-year-old kid reading this novel, and all of a sudden they get to the werewolf, vampire, and Anita Blake three-way. It's just like, mommy, what is a menage a trois? You know, and stuff like that. It's unbelievable. So, anywho, I'm looking forward to seeing what this graphic novel.
Of course, if the kids are listening to this podcast right now.
Yeah, they're gonna, of course. But I'm curious to see it come out.
So you're buying level, is what you're saying.
Well, I'm gonna check it out, because I want to see what level of censorship and what changes they had to make in order to put it in visual. Because you can get away with stuff written that you can't get away with stuff illustrated.
Well, it
depends on what publication company you go through.
That's why I said Penthouse. Because Penthouse Magazine...
Not just Penthouse, though. I'm saying is that there's a lot of comic book publications out there that are pretty darn hardcore.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You should write it. You should... I mean,
Marvel has its Max brand, which is kind of like DC's Vertigo line, you know, which is very adult oriented.
Just pick up previews from a comic book store and just look through some of the independent publishing companies. There's some pretty hardcore stuff out there.
All right, well, that's cool. But it was on Sci-Fi. You got this from Sci-Fi?
No, that was actually from some other news.
Some site. Other site he goes to.
A couple of months ago, just, but I didn't think it was actually...
Just say some other site.
...with Marvel. I don't think originally it was. I think it was... There was this company called Dabble Brothers Productions, and...
You sure it wasn't Diddle Brothers?
They were doing some things with it, but I think then, you know, it... somehow Marvel got interested, I guess, in just doing the publishing for it. And so that's kind of like a new thing that they're hooking up with Marvel. So, yeah. That company also actually does a lot of other series. They actually do the... looking through thing here. Oh, they do some other stuff. Anyway, Robert Jordan's stuff. They do a lot of other conversions of comic books or from books to comic books.
Well, I heard Alan Moore is coming out with a new comic book, graphic novel, that's supposedly really controversial. That's what?
Yeah, that one. The Lost Girls or something?
Yeah, The Lost Girls. That's what it's called. It's called The Lost Girls.
Yeah, that one is unashamedly porn. That's how they're marketing it.
They're even marketing it? It's straight up porn?
Yeah. Huh. That's what it is.
Okay. All right. Well, it's interesting to see what's going on. I heard he's insane. So,
well, you know, back to that subject of Buffy the Vampire, you know, I just finished the seventh season. And I have to say, watching it on the second viewing, that was probably the weakest season of the entire series. You think?
How so? How do you mean?
Especially the first half is just almost every episode, the first 11, maybe first 10 episodes are just really dull and very weak storyline. It wasn't until they got into, you know, more into the first that it actually got better, especially when the priest came in to play, you know, Caleb, played by Nathan Fillion.
I don't know. I would disagree with that. I thought the priest, Nathan Fillion's character of the priest, was just so over the top. And it was a foil that Buffy needed to actually use to fight and to help train the kids, because they couldn't just fight the first yet, because the first was the final battle. And the heat just seemed so forced, because Firefly had ended. He needed a job. You know, hey, we'll make a character for him. It just seemed like that. And I don't know if that's really what happened, but to me, I just thought his character was too much.
I thought that Firefly actually had already was still on the air at the time, wasn't it?
No,
it was over.
Huh. Ed, you had some other news, didn't you?
Yes, it was just released this past Tuesday that Microsoft is going to do their video version, like a YouTube. They're calling it Soapbox. The code name actually is Warhol, but I guess they're simply calling it Soapbox versus what you would normally go to for YouTube. I tried to check this out, but apparently you actually have to download some software just to view it. So I decided not to do that.
Yeah, I don't understand why you would need to do that. I mean, YouTube already said the reason why YouTube is successful is because it's just a, you know, Flash player, which everybody already has pretty much installed. It's got like, what, a 96% penetration rate?
It's
also universal too. Yeah. I mean, because you don't have to have a specific player with YouTube. It's all Flash, and that's what makes it awesome.
But Ed, the whole point is that this is Microsoft doing this,
right?
And they, you know, digital media or digital rights management, and they're all big into that. So they need to like make sure that they're controlling and keeping control and keeping track of who's downloading what and what people are getting.
So they can turn them over to Homeland Security.
Well, that's what's going on with the Amazon downloading service with the movies and stuff.
Yeah, they're being turned into that, Homeland Security?
I wouldn't be surprised. But you have to download an app in order to do that. And it's not a light app either. It's this huge app.
Yeah, I've heard. That's one thing I've heard about the Amazon thing. Was it called Unbox or something like that?
It's called Dumb.
Well, yeah, I've heard that the you have to download it, and it takes pretty much an axe and a pickaxe and a shovel just to get it off of your system. Because even if you uninstall it, there's still services and little, you know, registry entries still sitting
right there. Right, but here's the big problem. Let's say you install this program, you download like 20 movies, you buy 20 movies, you uninstall that software, you lose all of the movies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. And it costs the exact same amount to buy a movie through Amazon as it would to buy the DVD. So who in their right mind is going to buy this download service or use this download service?
Yeah, a lot of these we're touching on new frontier where a lot of these video downloads are just becoming really. I don't think they're not starting off too good. The first step in all these services are not good at all. I mean, experimenting, especially with iTunes, downloading a TV show is ridiculous because that's DRM too. I'd rather just go out and buy the DVD. And same for, you know, movies. They're starting to do movies now. And the movies are only like maybe $5 less than what you'd buy the DVD for, which it just seems like it's worth it at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all shooting themselves in the foot, but I think that's why Microsoft has this application. Because they want to maintain control, because they have pressures coming down from them.
Well, they're stating it, but see, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense on that, because it's supposed to be like another YouTube, and there isn't really a whole. As far as YouTube is concerned, there isn't really any copyrighted material on there, and if there is, that, you know, of course they immediately have to get it yanked.
Yeah, there isn't ever any copyright material.
No copyright material there.
Hey, Ed, actually, since we're on the topic, you've had some experience so far with Apple 7, by the way, so have I, and I think you and I share the same experience. Why don't you talk about that for a second?
Oh, that it's
been a pain iTunes, in the ass? I mean, iTunes 7, not Apple 7.
iTunes 7, yeah. That has been a pain in the ass?
Yeah, I've been having it. You know, it actually took me like four attempts at installing it to actually get it to install, and going backwards wasn't an option at that point. Once you started the first one, it just kept freezing up on the QuickTime install for me. And see, here's the thing. I actually own a professional version of QuickTime, or a pro version, I guess is what they call it.
Yeah.
So it was, it then lost my license, and then I had to go back and do the whole license thing again, and then that screwed it up, and it's just been a nightmare since I've gone over to it.
Yeah, it's been across the board, not just for Windows, but also for Mac too, as far as iTunes. There's still a lot of bugs in the application. I didn't have any problems with installing it, and did not have any problems with running it until I started playing certain podcasts through it. It would just continually crash. I hadn't had any problems with music. It was just certain podcasts. But I did have a specific podcast that I listened to religiously called Buzz Out Loud, CNET's Buzz Out Loud. And that wouldn't even play on my iPod to fix the problem. And it was the only one that was having the problem. All my other podcasts had no problem with my iPod. But to fix the problem, I actually had to do a reset on my iPod, reset all settings, default back to default, before it'll start playing the podcast. So iTunes and the new iPod update for iTunes 7 has just been really buggy. But yeah, I just experienced today. I was listening to one podcast, just kept crashing over and over again playing this podcast through iTunes Player. So I rolled back to 6.5.
There've been people that have actually been complaining that it actually has wiped their iPod. In other words, it doesn't, you know, you don't lose the music, but it takes all the stuff off of the iPod, and you got to reinstall it all back in. It's been pretty ridiculous. Actually, talking about iTunes while we're on the topic of Apple, I don't know if you caught this. Let's see if I can find it. Yeah, there it is. According to iConnectTheDots.com, Apple has gone after, what is it, Podcast Ready. There's a site called Podcast Ready, and has asked them to put out a cease and desist letter and to tell them to stop using the name podcast, because it is their term.
What?
Yes. Yes, no. I don't know if you heard about this. Yes, they're basically claiming now that they own the rights to the term podcast.
And remember, well, actually, I thought it was just rights to the words pod.
Well, they've been claiming the rights, the trademark on pod for some time.
Pod stands for portable on demand, and cast is broadcasting.
Yes.
So it's a portable on demand broadcast.
Exactly.
So they actually stole it for the iPod, if anything, because they wanted to be able to play their music on a pod, you know, portable on demand. Yes, music player.
They have the iPod. Don't you understand that they own? Once they've created the iPod, they own everything with pod in its name.
Sounds like revisionist history.
You think? Hey, Ron, yeah. What do you think their standing is on trademark there?
I don't know. I don't think it's
trademark. Aren't you a friggin' lawyer?
I'm actually looking at the. United States Postmark or United States Patent and Trademark Office website, and to look at to see who was filed for things and stuff, and several people have filed for a podcast trying to trademark
Doesn't it become like a public word, like a public domain word, if it's used in the common vernacular? Like, no one can trademark the word hello. Or no one can trademark the word hammer or Q-tips. Well, Q-tips, actually, you can. But
Apple.
But Q-tip was... But it's innocuous. For example, Band-Aid is actually trademarked, but are they really going to go against someone for using the word Band-Aid? Because it means exactly... That's the word now. And so the word podcast has become ubiquitous with listening to stuff on the web. And it has nothing to do with Mac or iTunes or Windows Player or anything.
Well, if you're the first person to be able to use it, I mean, Xerox is kind of a different thing because it's not really different in that it in and of itself doesn't mean anything. And, you know, back in 1985, a podcast wouldn't have meant anything. I'm not even seeing a application for podcast here.
There is one out there. Let's see.
Well, what about the guy who did the smiley face? What about the guy who did the smiley face?
What about him?
No, but he did the smiley face, and he didn't trademark it when he used it, and he put it out there, and then it got used, and it was... By the time that he went to try to trademark it, it was too late because it was so ingrained in the culture that the trademark company they wouldn't actually accept his patent on it, his trademark on it, because it had already been...
It's possible to lose a trademark once it becomes genericized, is kind of the term. And that's why, like, Xerox and Johnson & Johnson's ending, they... try not to use that term as a verb. You're supposed to, they photocopy things. You don't Xerox things because they didn't want to lose their trademark on it if it comes to genericize. But even then, there'll be big lawsuits and stuff like that. And
That's actually one thing that Google has been fighting really hard, because they don't want people to actually Google things. They want them to use Google. You know, so that they don't lose, it doesn't dilute the trademark.
Good luck. In the world of computers, all you get is like a year, year and a half, 2 years, and if it catches on, it's over.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, it's part of the culture then.
Well, I mean, it doesn't prevent them from bringing lawsuits against people and sending cease and desist letters.
Yeah, and the threat is probably enough for any, fledgling company to stop doing what they're doing.
True enough. Yeah. All right, we want to actually get into this week's topics, this week's topic, which Sterling brought up, and we're going to try and hit some more diverse topics, which are going to be a little more interesting to and broad to the geek community. First of all, I'd like to say that this week I'm very excited that Sterling has done done our first official interview for the Unique Geek with what was her name again?
Her name was Marie Krall.
And she's a writer for graphic novels.
A graphic novel, yeah.
Yeah, it's actually pretty cool. It's very. I got to listen in during the recording. It was a very cool conversation. I tried not to listen to everything because I wanted to kind of listen to it for the first time too when it comes out on theuniquegeek.com. But that put aside, that's a little preview. We wanted to talk about the Dogon. How do you pronounce it?
The Dogon.
Well, why don't you go ahead and bring it up there, Sterling?
Okay. This is a segment that we were going to come up. We talked a while ago. We were talking about Planet X, and I was thinking, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there. And so I was talking to John and wanted to talk about Conspiracy Zone. But for this issue, we're going to call this the Fact Zone. Because this is not a conspiracy.
Right.
This is total truth.
Sure it is.
Nothing.
Uh-huh.
What's basically the gist of it is that the Dogon are a West African tribe that have been living in West Africa near the Niger River. They've been living there for hundreds of years.
You know what would be more interesting if they're a West African tribe living in East Africa?
Anyway, actually, but the point is that they actually did migrate at one point from East Africa to the West Africans, which gets into a whole other part of the tale.
Of
what happened was there were some French anthropologists who were going around in the 1930s and 40s, basically looking at the tribes and looking at the peoples who were living in the area, and they found the Dogon people. And they actually discovered that the Dogon knew about, they have in their religion, a story about people who visited them hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And they preserved in their religion. I couldn't get exact dates. I couldn't find in the, and I don't want to actually say.
Close to 1,000.
I don't want to actually say like 5,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago, 4,000 years ago.
What I read, I thought it said close to 1,000 years ago.
Well, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds is like almost 1,000.
And hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. Keep saying it.
Okay, there we go. So anywho, but the whole point is that in their religion, they talk about a star that orbits another star. And we know the star as Sirius, or the dog star. And the
star Are
you serious?
I am serious. And the star that they're talking about is the tiny, it's a tiny star that orbits this other star. And it's a binary star system. And this is a tiny star.
I prefer
it. A lot. And the problem is that you cannot see this star at all from the planet Earth. With the naked eye. They didn't even actually get pictures of it until the 1970s. And these French anthropologists were talking to them in the 1930s. And so this was long, long before. And when they finally found that the star actually did exist, it was called Sirius B, it actually turned out to be a white dwarf star, which is a very small star. It's very heavy. And it does actually orbit the Sirius A, the dog star. And their religion and their beliefs say that the people that gave them knowledge and the information actually came from that star system.
But, you know, I retract what we say as far as the naked eye. Well, I understand you can see it, that it's in the constellation Orion. It's in the south part, and it's like the brightest star at the
south. You can see Sirius, the dog star, the single star, but you cannot see the smaller Sirius B.
Right, right.
You cannot see it at all. But you can see the
dog
star.
Which isn't so Sirius, by the way.
Okay. Yes, done to death. So that's the story that these people have been living with this knowledge for hundreds upon hundreds, nay, thousands of years in their and they preserved this visitation from another star system in their religion.
So let me ask you. Okay, so they say they were visited by people from another planet at another time, way, way in the future.
No, this is in the past.
Way, way in the past. Now, if you... do you believe that they were? Let me ask you that.
Do I believe that they were?
Yes.
Based on the information, based on the fact that they knew about this star before we even were like thinking about it, or we knew that it was around, but we thought it might be, but we didn't really like get to do it until 30 years, 40 years before.
That's what she said.
Yeah, it actually was discovered. They knew about it, and it's part of their religion. there's something there. They actually have a dance. And then when they do the dance, it's like a circular dance. And the dance, when they draw it, it actually mimics the orbit, the elliptical orbit of the two stars around each other, with Sirius A in the middle, not in the middle, but off to one side, and Sirius B going off in an elliptical orbit around that star. And when we actually started astronomically looking at it and doing all the science and the measurements, it actually hit it. Another thing, they say that the orbit of Sirius B around Sirius A is 50 years. The actual orbit is 50.4. So, come on, there's a lot of stuff here.
Well,
that
one
just
thing
doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, as far as a lot of this stuff that you're stating, and a lot of the things that I've read about this conspiracy, or you say quote unquote fact, is that we're basing this information off of two people in the 30s.
French anthropologists in the 1930s and 1940s. That's
who, again, who also believe- we are trusting this information.
Right.
That this is accurate information from these two guys.
That the information was published in the 1930s and the 1940s.
Okay.
The information wasn't validated until the 1970s.
We all know in the 1970s
everybody was high, so, you know, really, was that validated then either? Sorry, go on.
But I'm stating it as that we are relying, I know, yes, quote unquote, well, not even, I mean, anthropologists, yes, they're anthropologists, whatever. Again, right. We're taking information from two guys who, for all we know, could have made up all this information on their own.
Absolutely. And if the French anthropologists made up this information 30, 40 years before we even knew that we were able to even see the star there, then those two guys are amazing, because they made it up and they're the ones who were right about so much information. And then they had to convince the entire Dugon tribe to redo their religion and to create these elaborate dances and come up with these great creation stories to support these two French anthropologists' paper that they wanted to submit, because they wanted to get attention.
All right, let me do a quick poll then. The geeks that are on the phone, Ron, do you believe in alien cultures?
No.
Okay, Ed?
Well, here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say, and this is something I believed in for a while, I don't necessarily believe in extraterrestrial, but it's an awfully big universe not to. I mean, there are just so many bodies sitting out there. You know, we're not sitting, floating out there. I mean, there's so many planetary bodies out there. It's kind of hard not to believe that there are not alien life forms out there in those foreign bodies, and I mean, in the expanse of the universe.
Is that uncomfortable to sit on, that fence you're sitting on? Is it? I mean, does
Ed,
it hurt
you?
Ass?
You need to just say yes. There are extraterrestrials or other alien. There are other life forms living out there in the universe. Period. End of story. And the reason
Maybe
is
they
because
found out about it by from the Atlanteans. Know, from prior human civilization.
From Aquaman?
So you're saying that the Atlanteans passed on this information to them?
Sure, why not?
Well, then what?
Because Ron does not believe in extraterrestrials, but he does believe in Atlantis.
Yes, that makes sense. Well, here's the other thing. The word for these... For these people who came to them, they came to the Dugon, they were called the Namos, which in their language means an amphibious. It means to make drink. And they said that these...
Because they were drunk.
Beings. No, these beings lived in water. They described them as amphibious beings who lived in the rivers and the water. And that's where they were.
Those were
and
fish.
Then, oh, a few days ago. There I believe.
Well, here's another interesting point. The Babylonians have a mythos about aliens that came to, or creatures that came to their culture and their society and gave them knowledge and gave them information. And those creatures were also amphibious in nature, in design and appearance, and they lived in the water and all this other stuff. And those, when the Babylonian culture had that mythos, the Dagon people actually were living near that area, and they had were migrating out to the western West Africa parts. And so there might have been a correlation between a cultural exchange of two of the real events that were actually happening, and so they just kept that going with their culture, and they just incorporated it because it happened to where they originally were at.
And isn't it almost the same type of story too from the Incas in South America also, that there was reptilian like extraterrestrials that came down? That's pretty much what we.
Well, I do know that the Aztecs believed. I do know that the Aztecs believed that yes, their culture, you know, the aliens, their gods were white aliens, and they lived on the east, and they came back, and that's why they were wiped out when the Spanish came. But I don't know that. I don't know. That'd be something devils. Worth actually checking out.
Sorry, let me do that again. The white devils.
Let me see.
You guys can't hear. It's called the White Brotherhood or something like that.
No, that's not it.
You sure?
That's not it.
No, that's from Grand Theft Auto. So.
Yeah. But no, I don't know.
For recently, and this would hold on.
Is that what you read when you were doing the reading on this?
Well, you actually researched this, Ed?
Yes.
Wow.
I do not have an answer, so. But I do know that the Aztecs, in their culture, in their history, they believed that their gods were from space. Their gods were from outer space, another system, another plane of existence, or whatever you want to call it. Their gods were very powerful, and they didn't come down and they taught them knowledge. So there's this like real interesting coincidence in ancient cultures. And I'm not saying that humans aren't smart and able to create civilization on their own.
I don't know. Have you watched CNN lately?
Yeah. But the whole point is, one of the points about this is that there's this commonality, and it all started happening kind of like within like 10,000 years ago, these things were going on.
Yes, but
and there was like this area where things, the human cultures just started getting better, I guess is the word for it. They started stabilizing within relatively speaking, I guess, you know, arts and sciences and mathematics and all this stuff really just started exploding all over the planet. And if the genesis for that was a benevolent race from another system that came down and said, hey, did you know that the Euclidean geometry, you know, or did you know that the circumference of a circle is equal to the radius and all that? You know, that would really benefit people for changing their environment.
But they didn't
would it not?
That.
What? Go ahead, Ron. What were you saying?
They don't wear pants. Yeah. And so you think the aliens with their vest, you know, out of knowledge would give them the knowledge of pants.
Do they wear when they came down, did they wear like a one colored uniform? Was it all just one solid color?
I don't have that information. I don't know. But we can look at drawings and cave drawings of other supposed alien visitations, and they always seem to be wearing some sort of protective suit, or they definitely didn't look like regular human beings. And so I don't know that answer. But you gotta, come on, Ed, did not address the skepticism that it's either the French anthropologists made this great cloak and dagger, you know, pull the wool over their eyes paper that they published in the 1930s and 40s. 40 years before they even could confirm that there was an actual planet or a star there around Sirius. I mean, doesn't that actually speak that there's more going on there than what we're actually willing to accept?
It is fascinating.
It's definitely more than he's willing to accept, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, how do you explain it?
Well, physicists or astronomer or whatever he did, Carl Sagan didn't quite believe that. He doubted there were a lot of problems with the French guy's book, and he mentioned them in his one of his books, Broca's Brain, Reflections on the Romance of Science. those for any counter arguments Carl Sagan had to come.
So Carl Sagan had counter arguments against the French anthropologist's study?
Yeah.
What was the name of that book again?
Broca's Brain. In the Wikipedia entry on the Bugle, it mentions
Broca's Brain.
I'd be curious to see exactly what he was actually criticizing or what he didn't think was right.
Well, by the way, anybody that's trying to look this up, it's D-O-G-O-N for the tribe. If you're trying to Google, if you're Googling it, and this, I'm sure Google does not like me.
I don't know if it's pronounced Dugon. I think it could be Dogon, and so therefore that's where the phrase came from. Dogon it. Whenever someone would make an argument about aliens. Never mind. I don't know. I had something going there.
You had something, all right. But I don't know. I see this. I hear this story, and there's a whole culture of people. It's a whole race of people that have this in their religion. That this is what's been passed down for a long, 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 long time, and they. I don't see an explanation for it.
Well, let me ask you this.
I mean, do you really? Well, I guess not. Go ahead, John.
Let me ask you, Sterling. Do you believe that the Scientologists are nuts?
Scientologists?
Yeah.
I don't know enough about them to actually formulate an opinion on that.
Fair enough.
Do they believe in extraterrestrials? Or
well, they believe that basically that you get on a spaceship and take off out of here. I mean, there's a lot of there's a lot of detail there that I'm kind of generalizing, but
right.
But yes, they do believe in visiting. Different aliens coming to visit you during your ascension and your lifetime in Scientology. So,
I don't.
What's that?
Do you think that the federal government has knowledge of aliens and is hiding it from like the Roswell crash and stuff like that?
That's a good topic that we should get into at a later time. But well, just as everyone's general sense, Ed, what do you think of that? What do you think of that? Is Roswell actually viable? Is there knowledge that the government has that they're hiding from us about alien visitation?
From what I've read and researched, that there could be a cover up there. I mean, not knowing all
what you read was the X-Files, right?
Yes.
What's your research?
Yeah, I watched all the anthology of the X-Files, and what they said is actually it was a cover-up of a cover-up of a cover-up. No. what I've read and researched on the internet, I mean, the government has and is still actually covering up quite a bit in Area 51, in that whole area. What they're covering up, I'm not really sure if it's truly extraterrestrial. It could be. I mean, from what I understand, in that period of time, that there were quite a few surrounding sightings that were just, miraculous, that it's kind of hard to explain, that nothing on Earth really could perform or would, actually, what I'm saying. There's nothing on Earth that could have done what it did as far as being a crash or whatever. I've actually heard of, we hear these reports all the time. I mean, if there are a bunch of crackpots, maybe some of them are, but for the most part, yes, we've heard a lot of the same and similar stories that people have seen some sightings in the skies that are just unexplainable. I mean,
I hear you on that, Ed. And one thing I would just like to say is that this is not a modern phenomenon. Seeing things in the sky is not a modern phenomenon.
No.
Throughout all of history, there have always been reports, there have always been stories and legends and myths and religions about otherworldly beings that come down and influence or talk or interact with people.
And not just beings coming down, but just seeing unusual fires in the sky. And we're not talking about falling comets and stuff like that. Just actually seeing fiery objects in the sky that don't always fall straight down to the earth, but before aeronautic technology, that way back in, I guess, from some of the stories I've seen of the South America Incas and the Aztecs and all that, that, you know, a lot of the drawings that they found in some of the pyramids refer to fireballs in the sky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it that's one thing you just got to keep in mind when you're thinking about this sort of stuff, is that there's more out there, and not all the information is actually available. And to read it and to look in all of it, you really have to make a judgment call based on all of the information.
Well, I'm going to state something here, and I'm going to go on record, I guess, by stating this, but honestly, and I'm not joking when I say this, but there was a time that I did travel to Panama City that I did see something.
Wow, that's
very
interesting. Oh.
I did see something very unusual in the distance in the sky that was not a falling star. It was not a helicopter, because it moved and did things in the air that no helicopter airplane could ever do.
And that was David Lee Roth.
Actually, it was Engelhardt Humpeldick, whatever you call him.
Well, Panama City and Pensacola are known as UFO hotspots.
Well, this is not, so you know. I mean, it wasn't like near Panama City. It was on the way to Panama City. So it was like in between Tallahassee and Panama City.
Oh, okay. Well.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and wrap this topic up. And it was a very interesting discussion, I think, at least. I don't know why I have to say that.
I thought it was.
Eh, whatever. Anyway, hey, so the Week in Geek. Who's got one? Ron? All right, then. Serv? He's not on the call. How about Shag? Nope, not here.
Go out on a limb for Simon.
Simon, you there? No. Why, yes. I was,
well.
Okay, Ed, your best Simon impression?
Well.
Oh, that's great. All right, Ed, you got anything?
No.
Okay. Sterling?
No, I've been real busy working on my... Well, I've been doing a lot of programming, working on my website. That's what I've been doing. That's my Week in Geek. I'm telling you, one of the great things about that is make sure you do a lot of backups.
And check your hardware.
And even with backups, it's not an easy thing to recover from a crash.
Yeah, and I have nothing for this Week in Geek either, but I was reading a calendar on for this week and a history of, you know, this week in history, and that is actually interesting. We're recording this on Sunday the 24th of September. This week in 1936, Jim Henson, the creator of the Muppets, was born. This week, in 1974, scientists announced the discovery of a hole in the ozone layer, which then in 1975 was then said it was a lie. In 1976, they found it again. 1977, they lost it. 1978, they were all high. 1980, they were all spending all their money, so it didn't matter. Let's see, in 1925, Seymour Cray, the founder of the Cray Computing Company, was born. And let's see what else happened. And in 1982, cyanide-laced Tylenol kills 6 Chicago people. Later, that dude was caught, who he basically wasn't actually the factory that was happening, and it was at the actual stores, and that's where the foil caps started to come into play. So, the tamper-resistant caps, so no one could tamper with them and put cyanide in them.
Speaking of tamper-resistant,
yes,
may I break in with a Week in Geek? Oh. I just remembered.
Oh, no. Sorry, it's too late.
Stella,
you're fired.
Oh, man.
You can't talk about the Xbox controller package again.
No, I'm not going to.
Tamper-resistant. It's an Xbox controller package.
No, I'm talking about the new releasing of Star Trek, the original series, with
this tamper-resistant?
Updated graphics.
Apparently it wasn't tamper resistant.
Apparently it wasn't, and it's a good thing because they did a really nice job. In fact, it was seamless. And the only reason that I knew was because we talked about it, and also when they show the comet on the screen, you looked at the comet, it looked like a freaking comet. It was unbelievable. And I vaguely remember back when I was watching it when it first came on.
It didn't look like a semi-comet?
It looked like a freaking styrofoam ball with like the glitter coming off of it. Yeah, it was. They did a phenomenal job with the new Star Trek series, and they even added a character to the show. One of the standard scenes. Yeah, one of the scenes is like, okay, we're gonna have a meeting in the bridge or off of the conference. Everyone on the bridge left except for Uhura, and a guy came in off screen and sat down in the chair. He's not there. It was really good. So I'm curious to see the rest of them when they start coming out. I think it's gonna be great. Tamper resistant, not really.
All right. Well, that's gonna wrap it up this week. And I guess that's it. Anybody got anything else? Nothing? Anyone?
Nothing.
Yeah.
You know, it's never mind. Forget it. I have nothing.
I know that.
How do we wrap up the show? For some reason, we always come to the end, and we never really have any way to wrap this up. But Ron had something else to add.
You usually play like some really weird music.
I was saying T-Mobile recently. There was a government auction of more bandwidth or of frequencies and stuff, and T-Mobile was able to want a bid to buy a lot of it. So if you have T-Mobile service, they should be getting better. It's a good thing for T-Mobile.
So that was supposed to be in the news segment then?
Yeah, it's more of a news thing. Okay. I've never heard of it work. I don't know.
You're about an hour late on that.
I can say that Bright House sucks. So.
Anyway. Bright House? What is that?
I have no problem with Bright House.
Yeah, well, me and Bright House
except
don't go
for
long
sometimes
anymore.
Some defective equipment, modems and shit.
Well, I have that problem with stuff. My love life, so. Defective equipment. The end of the show is now. I'm going to take it.
Bye.
Join us next week when we talk about something else.
Farewell. Peace.
Boo. All right.
This has been a production of The Unique Geek. Visit us at theuniquegeek.com. You can reach the geeks by calling 813-579-3542. Send your comments and complaints by email to geeks@theuniquegeek.com. Or just stop by the site and join the forums. This podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share Alike license.